my podcast today on Living Beyond Mental Illness with Lauren Coker. We're going to be talking about my recent experience at a psychiatric center. Before that, make sure you leave a review on iTunes or send me a message on Anchor so I have some ideas how I'm doing, some things that you want to hear or listen about. This podcast is about a little bit of my mental illness, living life beyond that, breaking the stigma and making it okay to talk about. So today we're talking about my recent experience. I was hospitalized for 9 days at a psychiatric center. I signed myself in. I was having some issues. I have been diagnosed bipolar when I was 16, but they think I've had it since the second grade. I have currently the diagnosis is bipolar 1 with mixed states and psychotic episodes. I recently in the last year have been struggling with hearing voices. They are teetering between bipolar disorder and schizoaffective, but they really haven't made a decision. We're trying some medications and kind of seeing where it goes from there. But I wanted to talk about what people, common misconceptions about what people have with psychiatric centers. A lot of times what we see on TV is what we think someone from a psychiatric is. If you've ever watched any movie, for instance, Girl Interrupted, which is one of my favorites, it's a common controversy whether a psych ward is a proper thing to have in a Halloween, like, fright house, whether it's perpetuating stigma. Honestly, I think the best way to really break down the stigma is not so much as preventing people from doing things like that, because there's always going to be someone who does, but instead of trying to stop people from doing that, actually like talking about it and giving people realistic expectations and reality of what it's really like to be in something like that. I feel like the more we talk about it, the more people really understand our viewpoint and the more people who'd be willing, if they are in a situation and a mindset where they really need to be in some sort of psychiatric care, that they'd be willing to go. Because you hear about all the horror stories and you hear the old mental state hospitals, and there's still things that go on a shady level. I'm not going to deny anyone who's had a bad experience. I've had nothing but positive experiences. I know a lot of people who've had positive experience, so that is what I'm going to talk from. It's from my viewpoint and my own personal experience. This was actually my second time. My first time was in 2002. I was a senior in high school. So I'm going to talk about my most recent hospitalization, which was in this past December, so December of 2018. I was there for 9 days. I signed myself in on December 14th, and I got out on Christmas Eve. So the first thing I want to talk about as a common misconception is, you know, what is psychiatric facility like? The center I went out, I was on a unit, which basically was comprised of two hallways, with bedrooms from, rooms down each hallway. Then in the center was a nursing station. And then they had three activity rooms, a little coffee, water area where you could get horribly lukewarm, terrible coffee, and then an ice and water machine. So they always had that available to you. They usually either had one or both activity group rooms open. It all depended. It all really depended on if they had enough staff to watch everyone. So here's the thing. You're going to be observed a lot. There's going to be a lot of people watching you. There's going to be a lot of people asking you questions, how you're doing. It gets pretty irritating after a while. At night, they do 15-minute checks. All day long, they do 15-minute checks. Every 15 minutes, they have to see where you are to make sure. And a lot of that is for your safety, particularly if you are there because of suicidal ideations. They want to make sure that you're not going to harm yourself. And this is with everyone. So it's not just like if you came in with suicidal ideations, they're going to watch you. Everyone gets checked on every 15 minutes. That includes at night. So every 15 minutes, someone's opening your bedroom door, checking and peep in there, make sure you're okay, and then closing the door. It's very hard to get used to. So you don't get a whole lot of sleep at first. Eventually, you kind of get used to it. It all depends on the tech that's doing the checks. Some are better at it than others, but you'll have that anywhere. It's just like being in a hospital. So one of the first things I'm going to go over is so since this was my second time being there, I was kind of prepared. I prepared myself ahead of time. I knew for the most part the rules of the facility. I can tell you right now that if you're admitting yourself, even if you're being admitted, which is considered a 302 from like the hospital or a psychiatric or some sort of medical professional or a family member, you're not going to be allowed belts. You're not going to be allowed shoelaces, any heavy boots, any strings. Depending on the facility, you may be allowed a hooded sweatshirt. The first time I was there, I was not allowed a hooded sweatshirt, but I was on the adolescent unit. As an adult unit, they did allow them. Once again, it is facility rules. On this particular facility, they had the list of the rules already listed on their website, so I could go up and check. I knew I was allowed four outfits, four tops, four bottoms. I was allowed one set of pajamas, a sweater, and a heavy jacket because this facility allowed smoking. Not all facilities do. I was also allowed footwear that was not with laces, so you could have like on slip-on shoes or something like that, or if you brought house slippers or something of that nature. I packed my clothes. Unfortunately, I wasn't really in the best state of mind when I left. That's why it was going. And I wore my boots with my laces. So I got a sweet pair of plastic slip-on sandals and some non-slip socks. So my footwear was on point. I was looking good with my granny sandals, looking like a dad with my socks on, because I was cold, because I'm always cold. So, I mean, if you know that you're going to check yourself in, that's something maybe to check in ahead of time. The next thing that I want people to do, once again, is preconceived notions. So, a lot of the trope is, the drooling, mindless patients, you're hearing someone screaming in the background, you have the people dressed in white and they're rough handling and stuff. It's kind of like Happy Gilmore, where the grandma's being threatened by, the nurse aide and like, oh, and any other horror movie that you may see, they're doing experimentations on it. A lot of these people are just everyday regular people. They're in this particular facility. They're called mental health techs. A lot of them, particularly, had been through some sort of thing of their own. Either they had a parent that had some sort of mental illness. They have one themselves. There was one who had fought a drug addiction at some point. So a lot of these people who are doing this position had actually been in some shape or form in your placement. So they have some understanding of what you're actually going through, which is actually really comforting because you don't feel weird and they don't make you feel weird, at least the facility I was at. So what is the reality of it? The reality is I spent a lot of time milling about because they would do like social groups. No lie, I did a some sand art where you like peel the sticky paper off and you put the sand on it. It's different colors. I did like a beach scene. Did one of those because it was for Christmas. We did foam. Excuse me. You might hear my dogs in the background. You might hear like gingerbread houses, and they were foam, and we decorated the gingerbread houses together. Like, move over, kids. I'm taking all the shit off the fridge. Mom's putting up her stuff, kind of deal. I did some drawing, a lot of coloring. We did group therapy, which was absolutely amazing. If you participate, which is another point that I'll get to. And I say a lot because my brain doesn't always fire when I need it to. It kind of like needs a little kickstart sometimes. So if I get along a pace and I kind of drop off, that's just because that's how my brain works. It goes a little fast, so I have to kind of like slow it down for a second so my mouth can catch up. We did group therapy, which was amazing. I had some pretty amazing breakthrough moments. Social workers do group. There's something called allied therapy, which they do stuff with like music and art. We had gym. I had played so much kickball. Every night after dinner. I haven't played kickball since elementary school, so I was rocking kickball at least 4 or 5 times. It got pretty heated at one point. I mean, the last game I was there for, like, it was pretty intense. I'm not gonna lie. People were like dive bombing for the bases and someone hurt their hip. Like, it was amazing. It was a great time. But I watched, I think we ended up watching the whole first season of Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I had already seen, which I was fine with watching again because I love that show so much. We lost listened to a lot of music. Fun thing about TV, we weren't allowed to watch anything over PG. So no R-rated movies, nothing MA because they may have possible triggers for people because there are people there from all kinds of backgrounds. Which gets to the point of a lot of these people were normal, everyday people. We did have some people who weren't really lucid and with it. We had one woman. She came, I think it was like the last 3 days I was there. And no lie, she was up for like 2 days straight. Like, I don't even remember if she fell asleep. I think she fell asleep a little bit the first night, but like after that, she was just like powering through it. She was up at, fuck, it had to have been like 4 in the morning, screaming the power of chocolate up and down the hallway. And her room was across the hall from mine, so she like slam her door and she'd start banging on the wall, and then she'd come back out, and then she was backing up and down the hall, yelling. And I just the only part I remember is the power of chocolate because it just stuck in my mind. It's just hear this lady screaming, "The power of chocolate, the power of chocolate," just up and down. So that is a real thing. There are people who are much more seriously ill than someone like myself, but majority of the people that I had talked to were there for some kind of depression. They were there because they were following some sort of addiction, whether it be drug or alcohol. People like myself with mood disorders, there was a lady there who I love so much. She was schizophrenic, and she was pretty lucid most of the time. You could have conversations with it, and then all of a sudden, like, it would just like switch like that, and she would just kind of like go into this, and she had like this weird voice that would come out, and it was almost like a pirate, and she would start talking like this, and oh, she was adorable, and she would just randomly say things like, "Yeah, I'll give you a $10 bill and a bra to go." We're like, "Thanks." And obviously not for her privacy, not going to say her name on this, but nonetheless, it was super interesting because she was a super nice lady. Her and the Power of Chocolate lady got into a fist fight, so they had to move her into another unit, but that's a story for another day. But I made a lot of friends, and the reason why is because when you walk through the door, all preconceived notions are gone because these people have no idea you're here. A lot of times, the first thing they're going to ask you is why you're here, or what your diagnosis is. I think is one of the first things, like, "Oh, why are you here? What's your diagnosis?" Aside from your name, sometimes I think I did have one person ask me what my diagnosis was and didn't even ask what my name was at first. But you instantly kind of relax. Like, it's real nerve-wracking at first. I'm not really good in social situations. I have a real time, hard time understanding social cues. I don't really like if you're looking for me, you say something, you're looking like fishing for compliments or you're fishing for me to like give you advice or something. I don't catch on very well with that. I'm like, "Oh, yeah, well, my dog happened this too." And I don't mean it. And sometimes it comes across self-centered, but it's just me not understanding what you're looking for. So a lot of times if you're looking for something from me, you have to just fucking say it because I just don't get it. But I remember I was sitting there and I was terrified. I wasn't even with it because I mean I was off my rocker at that point anyway. And this girl came up, she asked if I was hungry. And this is how my brain works. I said, "Yeah," because I'd missed lunch. And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Well, I think so." She's like, "Well, I got a Pop-Tart. Do you eat Pop-Tarts?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I remember she brought me a blueberry Pop-Tart. And the first thing I say, she brought me a blueberry Pop-Tart, and her hair was the color of blueberries. So like she had this bright blue hair. And I was like, oh, the girl with the blueberry hair brought me blueberry Pop-Tarts. And that's how it stuck into me. We later ended up becoming really good friends. But whoever you are on the outside world doesn't matter to these people at all. Because they don't know. They don't know the shit that you went through. They don't know all the mistakes you made in the past. And honestly, they don't ask. A lot of it is if you want to add to the conversation or if you want to open up and tell these people these things, it's completely up to you. No one pries. They may ask some questions, and if it's not something you're comfortable with, they let it go. And it's amazing. I feel like we as a whole in the world need to be more like this. Like you come across someone and despite what you heard of them, you can't judge them on that. So I got to be who the person I have always wanted to be and the person I've always wanted to present to people because they don't know. They didn't know and they didn't care to know who I was outside in the real world. They didn't care to hear about, all the fuck ups I had made in the past. They didn't care to hear about what other people thought of me, or their opinions of me because they had no access to that. There's no cell phones, there's no social media. I mean, occasionally we could watch the news on the television. That was kind of, and they had a newspaper. Like, that's really our only contact with the outside world. We're allowed phone calls between 8 and 10. We can make as many phone calls around if it had been 15 minutes or less. So no more than 15 minutes because everyone had a chance at the phone. We had visitations twice a week, so someone can come visit us. But for the most part, we were closed off from the real world. It was gone. That world outside. Which is a trip because time kind of slows down. I'm a big person, like, I always need to know what time it is. It's why I'm always looking at my phone. It's not because I'm checking Facebook, it's because I need to know what the fuck time it is because that's just how I am. So that was real hard for me because there's no clocks in the bedroom. There's a clock in the nursing station, there's clocks in the group rooms, and that's it. That is your only access to what time it is. No watches, no nothing. So that was a bit of a struggle to me because then time was based on what activity was next. Like, oh, well, it must be this time because social worker work group is here. Or it must be this time because it's time for smoke break. Or it must be this time because it's time for, they're calling for lunch, to line up for lunch. So you kind of ended up living from activity to activity. And time really slowed down. I was only there for 9 days, but it really felt a lot like a month. So that was kind of crazy. And it was weird because time was still moving out in my real life. Like nothing stopped. Everyone, any problems that I had before I left was still going on. But I didn't actually have to deal with it, which was kind of a nice thing, but also a bit of a, stressor because you still have to deal with that shit when you leave. Like it doesn't, that stuff doesn't go away. So your problems go away while you're in the facility, but they're still going on without you and we're waiting you with like a baseball bat, like here I am, bitch, right around the corner. Which is really what the facility's for. So a lot of people get in there and they're like figuring out, like the first thing I want to know is like, when am I leaving? When, and that's a big thing. Like, when's your discharge date? Do you know when you're leaving? Do you know when you're going home? I honestly did not know I was going home till the Friday before I went home. So I found out Friday that I was leaving on Monday. I didn't ask for a while because I didn't really want to know because I wasn't in a rush to leave. Part of me wanted to leave because I wanted to go home to my kids and my husband and my family, and I knew Christmas was coming, and there was a lot of shit going on financially and a lot of other stuff, and I wanted to help and things like that, but I knew I needed to get better, and I need to focus on myself, which is a big problem that happens there. You make these friends, you meet these amazing people, you hear all the story, and there's something connected because we know on some level we're all broken, but we're not useless. We're still here, and that's an accomplishment. and we're here to get better and we're going to help each other get better, but we have to make sure that you're still focusing on yourself. You don't want to go in and fix someone else, which for me was hard because like, that's my thing. I love fixing people. Like I am attracted to the broken feet folks because I feel like I got to save everyone. So it was very hard. I also hate, self-reflection and dealing with my own problems, which is how I ended up there in the first place. So that was, pretty difficult. And, with that being said, you know, I focused on myself, and I think that's a really good piece of advice is understanding that when you're there to focus on yourself, and you're not going to get 100% better. So a lot of times you get put on medication and they're going to ask if you're feeling better. And it's a weird thing because you start to feel better because all the pressure and weight is lifted. Like, so automatically there's like the weight of the outside world is lifted. So you actually do start to feel better because you're like, oh, I don't have to deal with any of this shit right now. Because you know, who's allowed to call is up to you. So like, if you don't want to hear your dad put you down, well, you don't have to allow him privilege to call you. You can cut those people right out of your life. They're gone. You can cut a lot of toxicity out of your life. So what it is it's really just a preparing to get you to a level where you can function and be prepared to go back into regular life. Because those things aren't going to change. So it helps you build up. You're not going to be 100%. You're not going to feel like a 100% like a person because that's not the facilities for. There are some longer term facilities where you're there, like deep intensive ones where it's like 4 to 5 weeks. And, I mean, you're allowed to be there as long as you need, but you can't just like, if they notice you're just riding there cause you don't want to get out, they're going to kind of like little bird you and just kind of kick you out of the nest because you got to go. Plus your insurance is like, listen, you got it. I'm not paying for this anymore. So it's more of a short-term thing. There are longer-term facilities. This one particularly was not. But the most amazing thing I had heard while I was there was from this guy named Tim. He was one of the therapists there. He came in and did group therapy. His group therapy was probably one of my favorites. And he had said something that online, it was, when you relapse, whether it be for a mental illness or a drug addiction or something of that nature, you haven't failed. Okay. It happens. Relapse is a part of recovery. It happens to everyone. I have relapsed several times. It's cyclical. It happens to everyone. There's no need to be ashamed. There's no failure in it. But what you have to understand is every time you relapse and you start, you're not starting over. You're starting wiser. Everything you had learned up until that point has not left you. You still know those previous coping skills that are healthy, because sometimes we get into non-healthy coping skills, which is a different podcast. But you have to understand that you are not starting from zero. You're starting from wherever you left off, and you're going to keep going. You fell. That's all. You didn't fall and now we're a baby again. You tripped and fell. You're going to get yourself back up, dust yourself off, and go. It's just like being in a race. If you're in a race and you trip and fall, they're not going to make you go back to the starting line. They're going to have you continue from where you fell. And you have all that knowledge that you gained beforehand, that's not gone. You didn't forget how to run. It's all still there. You just have to use it. You just have to straighten yourself up and just use it. And that really meant a lot to me. Just that one sentence that he said, that if you're not starting over, you're starting wiser. Because I felt like a failure. I had just done a talk a week before. I was, talking about getting myself ready because, I really wanted to go around and start doing talks and really get back into what I love the most. And I fell, and I felt like a failure because of that. I felt like I was a sham because I had fallen, and that gave me the courage to like really step it up and realize that like there's more to life, and people fall over and over and over again. Everyone does it. It doesn't make you a failure. What you have to do is take your resources and learn to lean on someone. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be I can't think of a better failure, but not in that sense. Everyone does it. It happens to everyone. So it makes it okay. As long as you get up and you keep trying, that's all that really matters. So I'd like to thank you for coming to my first podcast. I will be doing this, I'm hoping, bi-weekly. So I'm looking at Mondays and Wednesdays. Once again, I would love for you to leave a review or send a voice message on iTunes or Anchor so I can see what you would like to hear in the future. I'm open to any ideas, and I hope you have a good day.